You are listening to a digitally remastered class of Rav Yochanan Zweig, Rosh HaYeshiva of the Talmudic University of Florida. This class is from the Robert L. and Rhoda Lipton Foundation Audio Library. For more information, please call 305-534-7050, or you can visit our website at www.talmudicu.edu.
Atam Nitzavim Hayom means you're standing straight, sturdy, like a fix to the ground. Kuchem, all of you, Lifnei Hashem Elokechem, Roshechem, Shiftechem, your leaders, your tribes, Iknechem, your elders, Jotrechem, your officers, Kol Ish Yisrael, Tapachem, your children, the Shechem, your wives, the Gercha Shir, Bekerav Machnechon, the convert that is in your midst, Mechote Beitzachat Shov, Meimachom, those that chop wood to those that draw water. What is the purpose of this gathering? Everybody, sentence 305, to enter you into a covenant with the Almighty and with His oath, that God is consecrating with you today. He's making a covenant with you today. And I want to discuss a very, very interesting thing that I think has a number of implications. The first question I'd like to deal with is, we're talking about a covenant. The Hebrew word for covenant is bris. The verb to make a covenant is in this sentence, Asher Hashem Elokech Koreis Imoch. It forges with you today. It's translated here. But the word koreis does not mean to forge. The word koreis comes from krisus, means to cut. So very interesting. We have like an oxymoron here. We're talking about creating a covenant, and we're using the word to cut. Cut is to cut away, is to separate. To make a covenant is to bind, to connect. So it's very difficult to understand how could the verb to make a covenant be the verb of cutting. It's exactly the opposite idea. Well, in Bris Mila, we actually say the same thing. If one of the blessings there is Koreis HaBris. But there, if you don't take it a little too, if you don't realize it, so you can think that, well, Koreis, you're cutting the skin to make a bris. Koreis, you're cutting the skin to make a bris. But it's clear that that's not the interpretation there, because it's not the interpretation here. So there must be some other understanding of how we can have the word koreis and the word bris. It's an oxymoron. So let's take a look at Rashi. Here says another very interesting thing. Rashi, for you to pass into a covenant. Also, Rashi is bothered with an interesting thing, this idea of passing into a covenant. Go into a covenant, like by bris milah we say lachmiso, to bring him into the covenant, to make a covenant. What's this idea of passing? So Rashi says like this. This is the Rashi on 305. For you to pass into a covenant, in a manner of passing, they would forge a covenant. They would make a barrier on one side and a barrier on the other, and they would pass between them. As it says, a calf which they cut in two, and they pass between its pieces. So Rashi tells us that the way of making a covenant was making barriers on both sides, and the two people who were making the covenant would pass between the barriers. That's what Rashi says. So that itself needs some kind of explanation. Obviously, the way something is done gives us some understanding of what is happening here. So I think according to Rashi, it's very interesting. According to Rashi, the idea of cutting means to cut everybody else off. You cut everybody else out of it. Which means a bris means we have a unique relationship in which everybody else is excluded from the relationship. So to cut a bris means to cut everybody else out of it. That's, I think, a possibility according to Rashi. That's the way he understands it. And his proof was bris bein hapsarim, which is what they did. Avram and the Almighty, some kind of anthropomorphic revelation there, go through the sides, and everyone else is cut out. But that itself needs an explanation. What does it mean that you cut everybody else out? What does that mean, everybody else is excluded? see if we get some kind of understanding in Rashi. Why should everybody else be excluded from a bris? But Rashi gives us a definition. Rashi at least helps in terms of defining the verb is to cut a bris, means to cut everybody else out of it. And the two, but why should it? What's the need to cut everybody else out? I would like to suggest a different interpretation. I'd like to go explain a number of things that are brises. There's a bris in this week's parsha. It's very interesting. The bris in this week's parsha is almost the exact opposite idea of cutting everybody out. Because in the bris in this week's parsha, we take a look at page, again, Rashi alludes to it over here, on page 312. Well, it's a long Rashi here, but Rashi basically explains that the covenant here was in order that, if you take a look at the beginning of the Rashi, 28, the last Rashi of the page. The hidden things are for Hashem our God, and if you will say, what are we able to do, that you punish the many on the sinful thoughts of the individual. The idea of the covenant here is that each Jew is responsible for every other Jew. Kol Yisrael arevim zeh bazeh. That's the covenant over here. Each Jew is responsible. So let's understand what the nature of that covenant is. What the nature of a covenant. All right, so we're trying to understand three things. The first thing we're trying to understand, how we have the verb to make a covenant, is to cut a covenant. So Rashi gives a little bit of interpretation, cut everybody else out, but that itself needs an explanation. Why do you have to cut everybody else out? Secondly, we're trying to understand the notion of a covenant being a responsibility that we are all responsible for each other. What is that concept? Each Jew is responsible for each other. Right? In general, to understand what is a covenant, I was thinking like this. I think there's an enormous amount of implications sociological in our families and everything. If you have a complete entity, and you have another complete entity, and they decide to combine, what you have is a partnership. One and one or two. A partnership from all perspectives, legal, emotional, philosophical, partnership is dealt with as being two individuals side by side. A partnership earns money. The moment the partnership earns the money, the pro rata share in the partnership of each partner is immediately taxed as individual income. You don't need any distributions. When a partnership owns money, because a partnership is in theory, each one is it's really two sole proprietorships next to each other. It's like a shchenis. We're neighbors. It's almost neighbors. We share space. You market. I produce. But you're talking about as soon as they earn money, I've earned that money. You've earned your money. A bris is not a partnership. A bris is a merger. A merger means that instead of being a partnership, you've created a oneness. Instead of being two, there are one. And that has a lot of enormous differences. In a merger, the entity that we are both working for is this entity that we have created. In a partnership, each person is working for himself. In a oneness, each person is connected, there's one. In a merger, each one is working for himself. Each one is using the other one for their benefit. You know, you have to do certain things, you have to invest certain time, certain efforts, you have to tolerate the other person's personality, but ultimately your goal is the end of the week to take a check for your family. A partnership legally and halachically can be easily dissolved because it's two separate entities. So it's not hard to dissolve. We're two individuals next to each other. We go, we move away from each other. A oneness needs surgery. To dissolve that's surgery. How do you create a oneness? How do you create a oneness as opposed to a partnership? Partnership is easy. Let's get together. The way a oneness is created is only one possible way. That's by each side recognizing that they are an incomplete entity without the other side. They only become a complete entity with the other person. The recognition of my inability to do certain things, and therefore I'm incomplete, and I can only become a complete entity if I'm merged with you. That's a whole different philosophy, let's say, of marriage. Marriage is a bris. The suin is called a bris, the Gemara says. That's a covenant. What does it mean it's a bris? I say, because marriage is not a partnership either. Marriage is an entity of one. The two people have merged into one. That obviously is enormously different than what people, psychologists talk about, what social workers talk about, what novelists talk about. They talk about the marriage partnership. That's not a halachic concept. That's a secular concept, that marriage is two. And therefore marriage is easily divisible because it's only two people next to each other. And marriage is a sense that each person has their own agenda in life. And we have to figure out how to accommodate each other because we're basically talking about two. Each one is really only interested in using the other person. It's very interesting. From a halakhic point of view, the way Rashi understands the essence of a marriage is in children. The oneness of a marriage is ultimately fulfilled by children. That's the way Rashi learns in the sentence, a person should leave his mother and father and he should cleave to his wife and they should become one flesh. So Rashi's bothered, what does it mean? What creates the one flesh? Intimacy. That's not one flesh. Today it's together, and the moments later it's separate. So that's not one flesh. So Rashi says one flesh means creating a child. And if you look at the child as the corpus of the marriage, then what we really see is we have a single entity that was comprised of both people, have now merged into a single entity that's really indivisible. A child, the parents, the mother and father are indivisible parts of this child. Therefore, marriage which does not focus on children is hard to believe is ever really going to be a merger. It's not going to be a bris. It's going to be a partnership. Therefore, it's very important that there should be a focus. And well, no, we'll try it out for 2 or 3 years, and if we like each other and we can get along, that means you never started with a marriage to begin with. Marriage means a commitment to become one. And if with children it becomes the way of establishing that we are talking about one, this is forever, and God forbid in a divorce, their parents are inextricably intertwined with each other forever. Anybody knows it, not only a practical matter, but you know, every time you look at your child, you might have divorced your wife, but half your wife is still there in your child, and then a proportion of your grandchildren too. So it is an absolute sense of oneness, which means divorce is surgery rather than just the severing of one and one. There's no surgery. It's interesting, the word in the Torah to sever a marriage is called a krisis. The nasan la sefer krisis, to get in the Torah the instrument of divorce is called called a surgical incision. That's called surgery. That's cutting. Which it makes sense because you're one and now you're cutting one in half. So there we understand. It must be that in order to create a oneness, you also need a surgery. You need a surgery on yourself. You can't go into a marriage thinking that I have my way of doing things, my style of doing things, and to whatever extent the other person is this, so I'll make some accommodations, she'll make some accommodations. It has to be a feeling I am an incomplete entity. I'm actually incomplete. You have to do a surgery on yourself. There has to be a sense of any time to create one, you have to start perceiving yourself as an incomplete entity. But I'm complete. No. You have to make yourself from a one into a half. That is the kairos. The verb is that you have to open the one, that the one is not a complete one, it's an incomplete one. It really becomes a half. In order that to create a marriage, that a bris, all bris, this means that you have to have two halves becoming a whole. Each party that's a whole has to make themselves into a half, and then they can merge. Then you put the merged entity together. Rashi brought the example of Avram, bris bein hamsor. Remember, the way the ceremony has to somehow be indicative of what is being accomplished. So The Rashi is a fascinating thing. He brings the case. What was the Bris Bein Hapsarim? 9 animals were taken, split in the middle, and God's spirit and Abraham traversed through the middle. Obviously, the symbolism over there is the same thing. You take an animal and you split it in half. There's a whole animal. No. The animal, you started with a whole, but now you have two halves. And the two halves then are brought together, and the two halves become one. That's the perception and understanding a person needs in order to go into a marriage, which I think now explains the Rashi. Rashi says that everybody else has to be cut out. That's exactly what it means to be cut out. That's not a negative, you know, I don't let you into my life, I don't have anything to do with you, no. What are we cutting? We're putting barriers. What we are doing is defining the difference between where I have merged and I become one, I've opened myself up, and where I have a relationship with you as an equal, not as a merged entity. The only one in which there is a merged entity are the Bali Bris. Those are two halves who become one. Now, everybody else in the world is not a half, and everybody else is a one, and I and my beloved remain a one in relationship to everybody else. That's the barrier. It's different. My relationship in it to those that are with whom I'm part of the bris with is different than with everybody else, because with everybody else my relationship is I am a complete entity and they are a complete entity. With a Baal Bris, I am a half an entity and they are a half, and we have therefore merged. Which means there's a whole different relationship. I mean, you do any kind of marriage counseling, what's wrong? You know, I still have some of my old girlfriends. You know, they work in the office. You know, nothing's really going on. It may be true. I'm not saying anything is going on, but the whole notion of a husband-wife relationship is something totally different, that there's no place. It's different. There's a oneness that's created there that's a different type of relationship. It's not a difference in quantitative, it's a qualitative difference. It's a whole different relationship, and there's no place for anybody else to come in between in that relationship. You know, I'm one, you're one. It could be a third also over there. But when you're talking about becoming one, two halves becoming one, everybody else is excluded from that becoming one. You know, if we had this feeling of marriage, it would be a different commitment to the marriage. It would be a different feeling also if my wife has a problem. In a partnership, that's my partner's problem. It's only my problem, because is it worth for me to put up with my partner? Should I put up with my partner's problem? Okay, that's a legitimate question. Should a person put up with, well, how much am I gaining? I'll weigh it. Is it worthwhile? In a merger, it's not that way at all. In a merger, is that we're one. That problem is my problem. It's not my problem because now I have to come to work earlier. It's my problem. An emotional problem of a wife is my emotional problem. Not that I have a problem because I don't have supper on the table and maybe she won't be a good mother to my kids. That's my problem. It's like I have a problem. Her joy, I have a joy. So it's a whole difference when you're dealing with a partner and you're dealing with it with the essence of oneness. Bris means we're dealing with the essence of oneness, and therefore in order to have a bris, each one has to feel that they're incomplete without the other, and we're being completed by each other. And Avram was taught, even with God, that's the way relationship. God and man is not one and one. God and man is one. Take two halves and make them one. There's an absolute oneness between God and man. Man who's doing things properly and reflecting all the principles of truth and the principles of the Almighty, there's a oneness with God. So it's the whole split in half and then merged together. We're now discovering in this week's parsha, it's not only to God, it's to each Jew also. There's a bris with each Jew. This is the basis of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh B'Zeh. We each have a responsibility for the other person. If one person has to do a mitzvah, it's not only his need to do the mitzvah, it's my need to see that he is doing a mitzvah. I put tefillin on my hand, but is that my hand's need, tefillin? Or that's my need that my hand should have tefillin? It's my foot's need that my hand should have tefillin. It's my heart's need. It's my ear's need that my hand should have tefillin, because my hand is an indivisible part of me. I mean, it's a oneness. It's part of the complete eye, and therefore in need of the hand is in need of all of me. That's the way we have to look at each Jew also. Each Jew's needs are my needs. And therefore, when a Jew has the need to do a mitzvah, it's not his need, and well, if he's not good, I can't count him for minyan, he's not religious, or, you know, it'd be nice to have more members in our shul, or be more in our club. That's not. A Jew's need to do a mitzvah is mine. I have to do a mitzvah to complete myself. I have to see that my neighbor does mitzvahs to complete himself, which means to complete me also. It means there's a whole different sense of responsibility we have for another Jew. And therefore, there's halachic consequences. I've made Kiddush already. And somebody comes in, wants to eat Shabbos, doesn't know how to make Kiddush. You're not allowed to say a blessing for no reason. You've already taken care of your Kiddush. Understand if you still have to do for yourself so he can listen to your Kiddush. But you've already made Kiddush. You've already fulfilled your mitzvah of Kiddush. You are obligated, you have a right to go ahead and make Kiddush for him if you know how to make Kiddush and he doesn't. Because it's your need that he should make Kiddush.
It's an obligation.
What?
It's a right or an obligation?
It's really, ultimately, it's an obligation. It's ultimately an obligation. I have Kol Yisrael Reim, I'm obligated. There's consequences if I'm not care and concerned about another Jew. Because we are one. Kol Yisrael, there's a bris with us. There's a bris. As I say, it's a different feeling. It's different than the sociological understanding of what a nation is. You know, it's a lot of individuals. You know, we band together to keep the Indians away. We band together to provide sources of parnassa, protection and educate our children. We have all common needs, and therefore we work together. The sociological definition of a community. We don't subscribe to that's all it is. It's that for sure. But in addition to that, it's one. So the need to educate your children is my need. That's my need to educate your children. It's my need to see that you have an atmosphere for Shabbos. It's my need to see that you have opportunities to get closer to God. I'm not doing you a favor. I am doing something which is my need. Now, it's true that you could say, therefore, it's selfish, but, you know, if selfish need, if myself means everybody, that's not being very selfish. If myself includes everybody, if I want for everybody else like I want for myself, that's not selfish. But there's a sense of let's understand that we are Balei Bris. There's a bris between us. Not only a bris between a husband and wife, there is a bris, obviously it's different levels of oneness between a community and between a wife. But there's still an absolute sense of, there's still a sense of oneness, and there's a feeling that your problems have to be are my problems, and your simchas are my simchas also. There's an enormous upside to that also. It's not that you just dare somebody else. You have to have that feeling. That's what the Torah is defining here at Bris. And there's only one way of doing that, if there's a sense of kores, if a person has to cut himself open and realize that he's not a whole entity. Most of us have this feeling we're a complete entity within ourselves. So obviously, in marriage, we know we're not a complete entity. We can't reproduce without another half. So there's obvious, there's physically the knowledge that there's no, you can't, you're incomplete. I can't reproduce. I can't have any continuity. I can't have any eternity without the participation of the other half of me. It's just not possible. But it's not only in terms of that, it's in terms of complementing each other. Each one of us is there to help each other. Each one of us completes the other one. We've said a number of times this, that the Mishnah, a very fascinating Mishnah. Mishnah says like this. If you have an option to be a tail of a lion or head of a fox, what's better? So the Mishnah says it's better to be the tail of the lion than the head of the fox. And the question is why? Here you're a tail. there you're a head. It's better to be a... In fact, one of the things we say on Rosh Hashanah is, you pray to God, I better should be a head rather than a tail. And here you're telling me it's better to be the tail of a lion than the head of a fox. Much better to be a head than a tail. The answer is, the tail is a lion. The tail of the lion is a lion. The head of the fox is only a fox. The tail is a part of the lion. That's a lion. A lion is, all of its components is the lion. And therefore you're a lion. Okay, a lion tail, as long as it's connected to the body, is a lion. The head of a fox is still only a fox. Then the Mishnah concludes, "Have you magdim shalom l'cholodim?" And all of a sudden, like out of left field, the end of this Mishnah is, and you should, when you see somebody, you should first greet him with shalom. I mean, it's like a solely, it's like coming from left, it's like totally unrelated. There doesn't seem to be any connection. The Mishnah starts talking about better to be a head of a tail of a lion than head of a fox, and you should be magdim shalom l'cholodim. You see somebody, you should go over and say shalom aleichem to him. What does that mean? The way I understand is that's what the word shalom means. Shalom means we complete each other. The whole notion is the head, the tail of a lion is a lion, and therefore every Jew, we all complete each other. The fact that someone is less than me is irrelevant. We're all part of one. We're just different parts of the same whole. It's totally irrelevant. And the fact that there may be somebody else out there who's more intelligent than that person and is better company, but that person is still only connected to foxes. This person is connected to lions. And that's the feeling of shalom aleichem. It's not hello. It's not just a greeting in English. It's just a greeting. But when a Jew gives shalom aleichem, shalom, I am shalom with you. We are completing each other. Mashlim in Hebrew means to complete. Shalom means we complete each other. The unity in the Jewish people is a oneness. And there has to be a whole different feeling that's, and I think to some extent that even if all of us can't articulate this, there's certainly a feeling that we have instinctively, I mean, the sense of charity of the Jew is different than the sense of the blacks given to Biafra. I remember the ones who were sending money to Biafra were the Jews. I'm sure there's more Jews sending money to Ireland than there are Irish sending money. And certainly to Jewish causes, because there's a feeling that that's us. The secular world doesn't have a feeling it's us. It's okay, I came. I mean, like, I have a feeling that, you know, I'll send money to Poland. My mom came from Poland, I'll send money to Poland. That's the feeling of it. It's a sociological entity. When I lived in Poland, I was a Polak. Now I'm in America. I'm in America, yeah. I have some general sense of charity. I'll send money over there. But I have no sense of being connected. That's the secular world. That's not our feeling. Our feeling is our connection to the Jewish people is one. We're one. And therefore, the hungry Jew has to give me some sense of pain. An uneducated Jew has to give me some sense of pain. That's because that's a bris. And that's why Kol Yisrael Arevim Zebazeh. So it's not that we have just an obligation to make kiddush for somebody, an obligation to help each other in the midst. It's because we're Bali bris. Because in essence, we have a bris. There's a merged identity between us. But this merger is very hard unless we begin understanding how much we need each other, how much each one of us completes each other. Most of us resist this. Most people, when I get married, I don't want to change. You know, I don't want to change. I have my agenda in life. Especially as you get older, it's like almost barriers. And nice things of getting married very young is you haven't grown up yet. Then you really are incomplete. You get married at 18, so you really are incomplete. So therefore, by definition, it becomes a merged entity. But when you're 20, ready, 25, and you get married, then each person has their own defined self. So that requires surgery to remember you're not really a defined self. It's an illusion. This is the way the incomplete entity has protected itself and is adjusting. But really, you need the other half to complete oneself. That's a bris. And there's the same feeling with the Almighty also. Man is not a complete entity, and we have an external relationship with God. There's a completion. We are completed. We have to feel incomplete. That's kores habris. And from that, others are cut out from. From the oneness, others are cut out. Because that's what a bris is. A bris means that only those that have that perception are part of it. And to everybody else, there's an external relationship. A bris is an organic change in a person. There's a connect. You become different because you've entered into a bris. You've changed. It's not a relationship. It's not a partnership. It's a change. Marriage is a change. You're a different person. In a partnership, you don't become different. You just have new responsibilities, new obligations. In marriage, you become different. A bris with the Almighty, we become different. A bris with each other, we have to feel we become different. It's not just the assumption of responsibilities. That's what koris ha-bris. Therefore, by bris mila, it means the same thing. Koris ha-bris doesn't mean you're cutting the skin. Koris ha-bris means you're saying man without God is incomplete entity. That's what you're saying. You have to get that feeling that you have to cut yourself open to sense that you're not a whole entity within yourself. You cut it in half and then you join them together. That's what a bris is. You take a whole thing, you cut it in half, and then you join it together.
I wouldn't understand that somehow cuts himself or incompletes himself in order to complete himself with us.
The simplest way to say that is HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to do good. In order to do good, he needs us. And whatever it means, you can't use the word imperfect, but his desire to do good cannot be fulfilled without us. And that's the language of some of the Rishonim, the Ramchal is the nature. I don't know what that word means, is a nature, but it just means that God and man are the way in which God can reveal himself. In order for God to reveal himself, he's man. And a revealed God is a God who's a kind God. Therefore, God needs man to, in that sense, I'm using the word to complete himself, to be able to do that which he feels should be done, to be able to express goodness and kindness. He needs to be able to do that.
Another pshat being that Hashem is everything. He gave up his space to create us. Mm-hmm. Our neshama is part of him, and therefore he, Kaviyahu, needs us to complete himself.
That's just another way of saying that. You were talking about how it's happening. I was just saying the philosophy of that is because he wants to do good.
I understand how we need him to complete us.
Yeah, that's obvious. That's not so obvious, though.
So right.
Most
it's
of the time, that's
obvious for everybody else, but not by me.
Probably this explains something that we can't be too proud of either. Anybody in business says, I can't stand doing business with Jews. Any Jew in business would much rather deal with Goyim. So that's, but we have to realize that comes from a strength, because when you're connected and one, you have demands. I just want to explain where it's coming from. You understand when a Jew comes into it, what do you mean you're going to charge me the retail price? What do you mean you're not going to give me this, right? That itself is the feeling, because we're one. Even though, therefore, it may not be enjoyable, and there's a lot of pressure and a lot of stress, but it comes from a good source. It really does come from a good source. It comes from the recognition that it's not an arm's length relationship. It's one. You know, partnership is an arm's length relationship. Here it's oneness. What do you mean? I need more now, so I got to take out more. You know, a partner's not going to ever say he needs more money, and therefore he's now going to take more money. That's called stealing. You know, and there's no way. If you're one, so whatever needs is coming, because that's the whole purpose of the entity, is to serve whatever part needs. Even though the hand might be, or the foot might be, a small portion, when it's ill, everything, every part of the body is using all its energies to help that part, because that's their need too. So now, if I have a need, so the rest of the whole has to be devoted to that, because it's ultimately their need too. That's where it's coming from. That's where that feeling is coming from. The feeling of demand is one from the other. Comes from a healthy feeling, because deep down we understand that our connection to each other is totally different. It's not just, we have to band together to protect ourselves from the goyim. We understand we really do have a different feeling of connection to each other. That we do have a feeling like of rights and entitlement, and therefore it comes across as a demand. But even in a merger, start demanding from one's spouse. That's not the way to do that. Should still be with respect, but the sense of being able to demand comes because it's one. It's their need too. You have to do it to me. You owe it to me. You have to. Not you owe it to me. You owe it to yourself to do. That's where the sense of demanding. When you deal with Jews, there's a feeling. There is that feeling that they're demanding from you. They're very demanding. Therefore, it's very stressful. They're not calling up for a favor. They're demanding. Why don't you get back to me sooner? Don't you answer, return your phone calls? You know, there's constant feeling of you'll throw that in also. Yeah, of course you'll throw that in. I don't have to pay for that. That's the feeling, but it does come from the feeling of a oneness. It's misunderstood how that doesn't free me of dealing with properly, but it's coming from a healthy thing. I'd much rather have that than all of a sudden everybody being polite and distant. Then we're not Jews anymore at all. Then we don't have a Jewish people. Because if the alternative would be like feeling totally estranged when you need something from a Jew, like you need something from a Gentile, or you know, somebody you have no relationship and you're not related to, and therefore it's much more pleasant and much more respectful, everything would be fine, except there'd be no Jew. That's not the Jewish people. Would have been ceased to be in it.
Comes from the other side as well, Rabbi, if you don't mind. Sometimes the seller says, you know, let me throw this in as well. In other words, it's not always a demand from the buyer, as you were pointing out, but it's also, because you're Jewish, the guy that's selling says, you know, let me give you a discount, or let me give you a little extra.
I want to talk about the positive, I don't want to talk about the negative. So sure, he'll go the extra. I'll open the store for you. When you know, I don't have hours now, 100%. You need, of course, come in. Sure. Sure, because that's the positive part of it. Sure. I didn't mean chas v'shalom is all negative, but the negative part is also not a negative. It comes from a positive.